The World This Week. News and analysis. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The latest U.S.-Soviet summit was concluded this last week on a note of mixed achievement. The two sides were not able to agree on limiting offensive nuclear weapons. They did agree to limit to one each installations of anti-ballistic missile bases for defensive purposes and to limit the size of underground nuclear tests. But the big goal remained elusive. Primarily, it appears, because the Russians are behind and want to catch up in the number of MIRVs, the multiple warhead missiles. On Tuesday night, President Nixon addressed the Russian people.
Each of us has a much fuller understanding of the policies of the other country, even where those policies differ. Thus, we have been able to meet this year, as we will meet again next year in the United States. Not in an atmosphere of crisis, but rather in an atmosphere of confidence. Confidence that the work we have embarked on is going forward.
On his way home, the president made a similar address to the American people the following night from the Air Force Base in Caribou, Maine, and then flew on to the warmer climes of Key Biscayne to rest over the long 4th of July weekend. The president and the Russian leaders seemed to get along quite well on this visit. It was some of the Russian bureaucracy which marred the occasion with a heavy-handed attempt to block the reports of broadcast correspondents on the plight of Soviet dissidents. The Russians simply pulled the plugs, as the correspondents, one by one, began to file their reports. The plugs were pulled again when the pulling was reported. First, Marvin Kalb of CBS, then ABC's Harry Reasoner, and NBC's John Dancy.
Tonight there is a couple of interesting developments at the TV studios here. The State Committee on Radio and Television, which controls all facilities.
Someone in the hierarchy of Soviet television tonight pulled the plug.
Soviet television authorities tonight informed the three American television networks that technicians...
It was an amateurish action, which the Russians did not apply to stories on the same subject being set out for the print media. They succeeded only in calling more attention to the developments they wanted to hide. While President Nixon flew home, his peripatetic Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, remained in Europe to brief West European leaders on just what was and was not accomplished in the Moscow talks. At one transit point, the airport in Rome, Kissinger gave this general summary to reporters.
First, it enabled the two countries that between them have the capacity to destroy mankind. An opportunity to review the international situation, and that was done in a positive and constructive way. Secondly, there were a number of bilateral agreements which will strengthen cooperation. And thirdly, good progress was made in the field of limitation of arms, both in agreements that were signed and in laying the basis for agreements to come.
At that point, Kissinger had just come from talks in Rome with the heads of both the government and the church. Winston Burdett reports.
Two great international issues highlighted his talks. The first was Italy and Italy's ailing condition, her sinking economy, her expanding insolvency, her surging inflation. For the first time in a quarter of a century, Italy again today is an international problem that concerns the whole of the Atlantic community. This, in effect, was what Dr. Kissinger himself said on his visit here. The most important thing, he told the Italian president, Giovanni Leone, was that the United States would be ready to join with others, if need be, to help rescue the Italian economy with an international loan. At the Vatican, the secretary had an hour's talk with Pope Paul, with the Middle East and the future status of Jerusalem at the top of their agenda. For the Pope, Jerusalem is a primary concern. But at this stage, there is neither a Vatican nor an American peace plan for the city. It's a political minefield which both the Vatican and the United States are approaching warily. But Pope Paul definitely wishes to make his voice heard on the issue and to be represented in Geneva when the Middle East negotiations are resumed there. Winston Burdett, CBS News, Rome.
U.S. relations with another NATO ally, Turkey, were ruffled this week. U.S. Ambassador William McComber was recalled in protest against Turkey's decision to allow its farmers to resume production of opium poppies, from which heroin is made. The Turks had agreed 3 years ago to halt poppy cultivation in exchange for a U.S. payment of some $35 million in compensation. About half of that has been paid so far, and Congress is likely to balk at paying the rest, and for that matter, any other foreign aid as well. New York Congressman Charles Rangel explained.
When I heard last week that the Turkish government had already made a decision to resume growth in the fall, then I met with the Speaker, and he assured me that Congressman Morgan, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, will report out the resolution, and that resolution calls for, one, the President of the United States either to negotiate with the Turkish government or to use the law, which we had included in the Foreign Assistance Act, to cut off all economic and military assistance to Turkey.
For the Irish, this week brought one more attempt to provide a government for Belfast that can rule Northern Ireland. A plan agreed upon by the British government and described by the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Merlin Rees.
The White Paper is quite clear on 2 points. A majority does not have the right to impose its will in all circumstances, nor does a minority have any absolute right to veto. Some form of partnership between Roman Catholic and Protestant is essential, as is recognition of the special relationship between Northern Ireland and the Republic.
China's Premier Zhou Enlai has been on the ailing list recently. This week he was visited in a Peking hospital by Democratic Senator Henry Jackson.
He told me he'd been ill. He's convalescing. He was extremely sharp. He's a man 76, 77 years of age. He was fully aware of everything that I had discussed for the 2 previous days. Unbelievable. He had it on his fingertips.
Senator Jackson also said his 6-day visit in China and 15 hours of talks with Chinese leaders helped him to understand the Chinese better. He is optimistic that a real detente can be worked out between the U.S. and Peking. In Washington, the prosecution rested in the trial of the Watergate plumbers, and the Supreme Court made preparations to hear oral arguments tomorrow on whether President Nixon should abide by a subpoena from the special prosecutor for 64 Watergate-related tapes. At week's end, Vice President Ford flew to Dallas to dedicate a new trade center, and for a short while, there was a flurry of excitement with a police report that a sniper had broken the window of one of the patrol cars in his motorcade. The shooting theory was quickly disproved, and the vice president, who was unaware of the incident when it occurred, later said Secret Service agents concluded it was the heat.
They checked it, double-checked it. They have worked with the local law enforcement people, and that's exactly what happened. A window in a police car was shattered by the heat, not by any action by any individual.
And this week also brought the story of a lady who lives in Bristol, Virginia, and who was blinded as a little girl of 6 when she stumbled while carrying lye to make soap, a common household practice in those days, 74 years ago. This week, after a relatively common medical practice of these days, a corneal transplant, the 80-year-old lady, Mrs. Josephine Mulkey, was able to see again.
You know how beautiful flowers and trees is. All that, I just thought it was wonderful to see them as good as I did. Very beautiful.
I'm sure we can all share with Mrs. Mulkey Jackie Gleason's phrase, "How sweet it is." The World This Week has been produced by Harry Poloshin. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News.